Welcome to Twisted Plot Podcast. Here is your host, Evelyn Marley.
Welcome, 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 everyone. I'm just going to get right into it because I know Miss Deanna is a very busy lady and I want to optimize this time together because I have so much to ask you and so much to get through here. So I just want to first introduce everyone to Deanna Moffitt, who is a personal coach as well as an instructor at Journey, which for those of you who don't know what Journey is, it is a coaching program that I am currently enrolled in. Surprise! I mean, I haven't told anybody yet. So Deanna, you're like the first person to like help me bring this out into the world right now. So
oh, I am so honored.
Surprise, everyone. I'm going through a coaching journey. So this program was created by Noelle Cordeau and John Kim. And I went through the gamut of finding a coaching program. And this one just happened to be the one that absolutely ticked off every single box. And I have to say, I think I'm about halfway through, maybe a little bit less than halfway through. Every single class that we've had has been just so eye-opening and so enlightening. And it's just fit so well with this personal like growth journey that I'm going on. So no matter what comes out of this, I really do feel like I am just a better all-around listener or person to be there to hold space, as they say, so that people can talk and just have someone there to listen. So I'm really enjoying it, guys. You should look it up if you are at all interested in doing something like this. So Deanna Moffitt, though, is an instructor at Journey. And she not only is an instructor there, and she does not only offer personal coaching services, she does workshops, Moffitt Talks, right?
Mm-hmm. Moffitt Talks Live, yep. Usually the last Wednesday of every month.
And she offers on her website power journaling courses. And in her free time, she is coming on podcasts to talk to people like me.
Yeah, that's all I'm doing. That's all I do now in my free time.
So I'm very, very grateful to have you here. Thank you so much for joining me, Deanna.
Well, thanks, Ev. I appreciate it. Yeah, you were just a light also in the classes. So,
oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. My first interaction with you was through your rejection rehab group that you had made on Facebook, which was, it sparked my curiosity right away when I saw it pop up in the, you know, Journey Intensive group. And I was like, click, I'm adding that. I joined the group. And then I think a couple days later, I had my first class with you where you did the Art of Questioning class. And I'm not going to lie, I'm a little bit intimidated right now to be asking you questions when I know you are like master questioner. You took like an inquiry and appreciation class?
Yeah, I went and got certified in appreciative inquiry, just a way of questioning. You're going to do great, Ev. You're going to do great. You have a natural sense of curiosity. That's really what, at the core of it all.
And I love that. I think that this whole journey about becoming a coach is just that spark of curiosity is just great. I want to know how you got to your coaching journey and how you actually came about this path.
Yeah. I mean, like anyone, I think it's a really circuitous route. You know, when I was growing up, I had no idea there was anything such as a coach other than a football coach or a basketball coach. Mm-hmm. And I worked in the corporate world for a number of years, worked as an IT project manager, and it was sucking my soul dry. I got paid really well to do a job that I did not love. And I did the job really well. I probably could have stayed there forever. But I started doing improv on the side just for fun.
Which is a little bit different.
A totally different exercise. Another part of my brain for sure. But I loved it. And I started performing in Portland, Oregon. And I formed a group with a woman named Stacey Halal. We called ourselves All Jane, No Dick. And we started doing comedy festivals all over the place. And I started asking myself, what would happen if I just focused on this, doing something I love? Well, number one, I wasn't going to make nearly as much money for sure, but I went for it. I sold my home in Portland and moved to Chicago and started doing improv all over Chicago and loved it. It was a completely different lifestyle. I was usually with people who were 10 years younger because I was 36 at the time that I did this, but I was really lucky because I had a business background. And I started working with places like Second City to teach improv to companies and universities, how how leadership is really affected by being able to stay in the moment and value people's ideas. And had a great time doing that. And then just realized, gosh, I don't know if I want to do this life anymore. So I packed it all up again and moved to Los Angeles and started working with an organization called Mind Gym, which is a global learning company, working and teaching workshops and facilitating and speaking on a myriad of topics around leadership and communication. And here in Los Angeles, I started going to a CrossFit box where I met Mr. John Kim, also known as the Angry Therapist. He was part owner of the box at the time, and he was doing these mindset classes for the athletes. And I was going to them, and I don't know, at some point he just mentioned that he had a life coaching course and piqued my interest. Really didn't even know what it was about, but I was like, yeah, sure, I'll throw down thousands of dollars for this. Yeah. And I went through it, and it was good at the time, but I mean, it was completely different. Noelle wasn't at the head of it, and it was really kind of John Kim at his kitchen table, just, you know, kind of building as he does, as he builds things, as he builds the bus, he's moving down the road at 50 miles an hour. And afterwards I said, hey, John, he asked me for feedback. And I said, well, I think it's okay, but I honestly still don't know how to have a conversation. I mean, I could be comfortable standing in front of 1,000 people doing a talk, but to sit down one-on-one with someone, I was like, I just don't know how to do it. I said, I think you need a class on questioning. He goes, oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, would you teach that? And I was like, what? I haven't even had a client yet. He goes, yeah, you'll figure it out. So I always want to be a good student. And because I'd been doing improv for years, I was ready to say yes and to things before I thought I was ready. Love the challenge of it. So, but I wanted to be good at it as well. So I dove deep into the research, did a lot of reading, did a lot of work with appreciative inquiry, went and got certified, spent thousands of dollars more to go get certified in appreciative inquiry. And so glad I did. It really took my life down a completely different trajectory. And then of course I started coaching and learning how to apply all this stuff. And so, yeah, that's my travels to get here.
That's amazing. And how long have you been with Journey?
I think I've been with Journey for 5 years, 5 maybe. Yeah. 5 years, 6 years, maybe.
That's incredible. Yeah. No, your class was amazing. I loved everything. You started the class out with just curiosity trumps judgment. Mm-hmm. And that has just stuck in my head. And I cannot help but just keep replaying it. Can you just explain that a little bit to the listeners, what you mean when you say that? Because the way you said it was just so poetic. And I think it would help a lot of people if they heard that.
It helps me too, honestly. What I say normally is that curiosity and judgment cannot live in the same space, which means that a moment you start judging a person or a situation, you've shut off all of your curiosity to it. And, you know, I live in Los Angeles, a big city, as do you, right? And so there's a lot of things I could judge really quickly, homeless situations, people acting like jerks, you know, driving. And I recognize that the moment I cut that curiosity off, I'm in a negative space. I start spiraling out. So if I can catch myself, I don't always do it, but if I can catch myself and just start becoming curious about the situation, or at least allowing myself not to be so judgmental about a person, I also get the benefit of not being in that negative space. Curiosity rarely leads to negativity.
I find myself using that on a day-to-day now with just the people in my house just every day, instead of if my kids come home and they say something, instead of going, well, why did you do that? It's more like, oh, geez, you know, let's talk about this. What's going on? What's happening? And it's just the whole mindset shift of doing that has put me in a more open space for them to just say what they need to say. So thank you.
And isn't it true that we can become the most judgmental with the people we love the most? We think we know them, then we can start judging them so quickly. And we really, I'm so glad you brought that up, because we really lose curiosity around the people that we love the most. We assume we know everything about them. And how could we?
It's just like when people say that their kids, they're everyone's like, I don't know why your kids act like that with you. They're not like that with me. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And I'm like, at least they're great with you. They're fine. They're not like terrors or anything like that. But it's just so funny because they know, like, it's okay. I can act the way I want to act with mommy, or talk to her the way I want to talk with her, because it's like that safe right. space, right? They can feel free to just like, and cry or be angry or do what they need to do, which is great. I'm like, just cry, let it out, just let it go. So, awesome. Thank you for touching on that. Sure. I really appreciate it. I want to go back to the rejection rehab because I signed up for this group that you made, and we'll talk a little bit about the examples of what we had to do it. But how did you get interested in rejection and what it means to be rejected?
Yeah. Ooh. Well, I think I grew up in a really chaotic house. I became a people pleaser at a young age. I think that was my coping mechanism to ensure I got what I needed, love, security, and safety. And that might resonate with a lot of your listeners. And, you know, when I became an actor, I started doing improv, I had to face rejection all the time. I got curious around how did I build resilience up around that. And when I was younger, I also faced a lot of rejection, even though I think I strategically at a young age placed myself to work really hard, to be smart and work in that area. And, you know, but I think all of us face rejection and it can be devastating for us and it can really mentally cripple us for a long, long time. And becoming an actor and going through the audition process, I recognize, you know, the first couple auditions you do are so devastating when you don't get it because you place all this importance on it. You know, by the 50th one, you're like, oh, whatever. You know, you're like, oh my gosh, it doesn't matter. It's not about you. It just so clearly becomes not about you. So I built up resilience around it. But then I read Zsa Zsing's book, Rejection Proof. And he did a 100-day rejection experiment where he set himself up to do something that would prove him to get a no. He really went out of his way to do big things that he knew he was going to get a no on, because as an entrepreneur and business owner, he needed to build up resilience. He had received a no that had devastated him on funding and just really stopped his whole progress. And he thought he needed to build up a resilience around being rejected. And through the process, he just learned so much. And I think one of the things he learned that I really took to heart was that he was just surprised at how often people wanted to give him a yes, right? On these big, huge things that he was going after a no for, he was often surprised by people's willingness to say yes. One that stands out was, and he lives in Dallas and he's a Chinese immigrant. So, you know, he's not the blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy that you can imagine that's going to get yeses all the time. Knocked on a door in full soccer uniform or football uniform with a soccer ball underneath his arms on a house in Texas. And he could hear a football game in the background, but no one answered the door. So he knocked again. Then he heard the volume go down and then he heard some huffing and puffing. And this guy opened the door, big burly guy in a football, football jersey. And Zsa Zsing says, "Hey, I was just wondering if I could play soccer in your backyard." And the guy asks why. He goes, "Well, I don't really have a backyard. So I was just wondering if I could just kick the ball around a couple of times in yours." And the guy goes, "Okay."
Oh my gosh. It's amazing.
And so he did. And, you know, afterwards he asked, he goes, "Well, you just seem like a fine guy and I have a backyard and yeah, why not?"
So it's incredible.
I mean, I think in our country that is so divided, we often create stories around us and them and what we think is possible. And for sure, people have had us and them experiences. I don't want to discount that. And yet, I often think that the stories we've created around other people and ourselves stop us from actually engaging with other people as well.
Absolutely. And so the rejection, building your resilience against getting the no and feeling that rejection, is that something that just you wanted to build upon when you decided to make the group?
Yeah, I'll be honest, Ev. I was teaching the workshop. And it was an inspiration that I opened my mouth and it came out. I had no plan of doing that. And much like John Kim, you know, building the bus as I'm diving it down the road, I thought, well, what would happen? What could I create for people who want to test their resilience? And I learned so much through that, not having really planned it out. I mean, I'll be really upfront with you. What I learned is I needed to start way slower or go really slower because I jumped the shark way early.
I thought it was great. And I had so much fun explaining the rejection mm-hmm. rehab group. I explained it to my sister. And I remember years ago, I'm talking like, like maybe 10 years ago, we had gone to a retreat in Tahoe. And on the way up, she's like, let's make this trip really fun. Let's give you some tasks to do. And I was like, okay, like what? And she said, one of them will be, you have to get the button from the inside of a man's collared shirt because they have extra buttons. So you have to collect like 10 of those. And I was like, I don't know if I can do that. And she's like, well, what's the worst that could happen? Right. You know, let's just think about it that way. And so I went along with it. And sure enough, I like collected like 5 or 6 buttons. And it was just one of those things where I had experienced that idea before I had gone into this. So when I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, let's go. Let's do this. I'm ready to go. Let's do this thing. One of the missions was to ask someone, mm-hmm. I think it was on day 2, you had to ask them for directions to a place that's not around here. So you ask a stranger how to get to, your example was Paris.
Right. I made it specific. You had to ask for directions to another country.
Another country, yes. And my experience with this was when I went to the school across the street, kids were playing, there were parents there watching their kids, social distance, of course. But I was explaining the rejection rehab to 2 of my mom friends. And in that moment, I just saw a stranger and I said, like this, watch. And then I walked up to somebody and I asked him for directions to, you know, Sweden. And he looked at me like, excuse me? And I was like, I know, it's crazy. I'm like shrugging my shoulders, hands up in the air. I know, right? And he's like, Sweden? And I said, yeah, how would I get to Sweden from here? And he said, do you have a phone? And I said, yeah, I do. He's like, I would start there. And I was like, great point. Really good point. I mean, I kind of wanted you to tell me, but I will look at my phone. Thank you so much for your time. Turned around, went back. And my friends were like, what just happened? What's going on? And so I explained to them. And your response back to that was really great, which was, you know, my friend said, that's not a complete stranger. You're probably going to see this guy again on campus at some point in time. Their kid probably goes to school here. So you're going to be that Sweden lady mm-hmm. who asked for directions. I was like, oh, well, no big deal. But your point was that the person that you're having the interaction with will probably forget about it, but you will remember it.
You'll have emotion attached to it. So our memories are because we have emotions attached to those memories. That's the reason we remember them. But for him, he's going to like, just pick up a phone and he's just going to keep walking. But we put so much weight on our emotion that we think everybody else is having that same feeling. And they're just going to think about us for the next 2 days about how ridiculous we were to not know how to get to Sweden.
But didn't you have a really great experience where asked, can you tell the audience about
yes. your... So I asked a young couple, I was out walking my dog. I saw a young couple approaching me. And the guy was on his phone and the woman was walking. And I said, hey, I'm sorry, can I ask you a question really quick? And she stops and they both stop and she looks at me and says, sure. I said, can you tell me, how do I get to Paris? And she pulled back and she goes, me, you want me to know? I'm sorry, you want me? And she goes, she looked at her boyfriend and she said, I guess you could fly. And I said, yes, thank you so much. And then she looked at her boyfriend and she said, well, what do you think? And he goes, yeah, I guess you could take a ship. And I go, yeah, thank you. And he goes, or maybe a submarine. I go, perfect. Thank you so much. And they kept walking and he would just now shout back things to like, or you could take a hot air balloon or a ski-doo. Like he just so got into it. And that was the one, it was on day 2 that several people were like, I can't do that. That feels too hard. That feels like I'm punking someone. And my perspective on it was, really what we're doing is we're jolting people out of their everyday experience, right? People walk around, like that guy was buried in his phone. He couldn't see anything that was around him. And we get in such patternistic ways of being that sometimes just a jolt out of to come to the present moment, like those 2 right there in that moment had a present moment experience, as did I, of feeling alive for a second. And how often do we have those? In our day-to-day.
Especially after the year that we've had.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of being so sheltered in place.
Yeah.
So that interaction, that human interaction has definitely been lacking and missing. And now we're getting back into the flow of things. And so what a happy little surprise to get. Where are you going?
Well, it's also like, I was joking with people. I go, I think I've gone feral. I don't know how to do this anymore.
Which the no is really what we want out of this, like
right.
what you were saying. The mm-hmm. no is really what we want. And why do we want the no? Why do we need that no as opposed to someone saying, yeah, sure, I'll help you along?
Yeah, well, the no is really for you to get it and to know that you're going to be okay. To experience getting the no and recognize you didn't melt, you didn't fall away, it wasn't the end of the world. You can hear it, process it, and recognize, you know, and part of the workshop that I taught was just recognizing that people say no for a lot of different reasons. And almost never is it solely about you.
Mm-mm.
And so recognizing that maybe they're super shy, or maybe, you know, like that guy was just thrown off. He couldn't think, you know, like process your question, that it's not, we make it about us because that's how our egos like to work. We make everything about us, but in reality, it's almost never about us. And the no can often tell us way more about the other person than it can about us. Michael Voss, who does a great book, Never Split the Difference on Negotiation. I think it was he that quoted, he said, no is just the beginning of a conversation. No helps us understand, what are they saying no to? Can we become more curious about it as opposed to just assuming it's about us?
And not taking it personal, it's like a muscle to build up for mm-hmm. everything, right? Just keep exercising that muscle so you can always know that you can't take it personally and you can know that it's not about you. Checking that ego at the door and just being like, bye, right?
Well, it certainly helps us, I think, if we can reframe it or not make it solely about us, 100% about us. It allows us to move through the feelings a little bit easier and faster. Because when we take that on as all about us and we make it, you know, that's our story, we just put into our backpack that we're carrying throughout our life just another burdensome story as opposed to being curious about it.
And you talk a little bit about that on your Instagram. That's where mm-hmm. I found more about the rejection because it sparked my interest more about mm-hmm. it. And I go, my listeners know, I go down the rabbit hole and I just immerse myself in it. And so when it came to this, I needed more. I wanted more. I wanted to hear more. And I found your Instagram video, The 6 Big Lies We Believe About Rejection, that you talked about. And I was wondering if just, we don't have to go too deep, but just if you can touch on those 6 big lies.
Well, the first one I see all the time, I think I was probably partaking in it, especially when I was younger, and that is that I need people to like me. And the reason, you know, we think it's all about them, we need people to like us, but what we're really trying to do is avoid people rejecting us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that keeps us trapped. And the more we're trying to work on people pretzeling ourselves, I call it pretzeling ourselves to have someone else like us, I had a coach tell me at one point, the more you do that, you have to realize you're actually manipulating the situation.
Ooh.
I know, isn't that tough? Because you can't show up fully as yourself.
Yeah.
And you're trying to manipulate them to like a version of you so you're not rejected instead of just being fully yourself. I mean, there's such a freedom in being able to show up fully yourself and recognize not everyone's going to like that for their own reasons. Not necessarily because you're wrong, but because they have their own story about whatever is happening. And that's okay. That's really okay. It's a hard one.
People pleasing. Yeah.
And it just goes into like the second one is that when we're rejected, we immediately think that there's something wrong with us. Right. And then that keeps us in that spiral of, well, they rejected me for this reason and this reason that, you know, we tell ourselves all kinds of stories. And there's something that we can hang on to is that's only true if we believe it to be true. Right.
Right.
Yeah. So I think I wrote in a blog post is that idea, if we go in for an audition into, you know, like an orchestra and there's 500 people auditioning for one spot and we don't get it and we make it all about what is wrong with my plane, da 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 da.
Yeah.
That also discounts the 498 other people who auditioned and also didn't get it. It's so much more than we can ever calculate into why we're being rejected in certain situations. And so when we can recognize, oh, it might just be, I'm just not the right person at this right time. Right. Mm-hmm. And then keep on brush yourself off and keep on going.
I love that so much because that idea of like, what's wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't I do it? Why didn't I make it or whatever? And then I think that the reframing idea really fits in well to that. If you can do that, if you can reframe, what about the other people? And then also, what if there is something else that's a better fit?
Yes.
What if this really wasn't the right path, but what if something else is a much better fit? And then working with that, which is hard to do in the moment because all the physical emotions you feel that kind mm-hmm. of take over the body. Yeah, that is a big one.
Mm-hmm. And then this one, because I was so worried and busy trying to fit in, I didn't actually experience this one, but I can see it in others. I'm rejected because I'm weird or I'm different than other people. And these are the people I love to gravitate to because they are weird and different. I think one of the things we have to really question is who gets to define what normal is.
Yeah.
Right? Who gets to define that? And when we're trying to fit in so hard to what normal is, and I know kids go through this to such a great extent, but the question might be, how do you define what normal is? Not what the cultural, not what, you know, this area says what's normal, but what do you define as normal? And there's a person on TikTok that I love. They go by Jeffrey Marsh and they're non-binary. And if you ever see, if you find them, their voice is so soothing, such a beautiful souled person and so clearly there to help people understand and process non-binary humans. And their soul is so grounded and solid, right? And I think of them when I think of being rejected for not being normal or not being weird, because they truly celebrate who they are. And along the way, I think when we're able to do that, it just allows other people to truly celebrate their uniqueness. We all have elements of ourselves that we want our uniqueness celebrated. This thing that you do, Ev, of this podcast and how you're showing up in the world, right? And what you're creating, it's unique. And whatever I do, you know, that I'm fun and I'm funny and I'm, you know, can also be super grounded and deep. That's unique to have those two things. We want that celebrated, but we also want a sense of belonging. And sometimes that sense of belonging can override that celebration of our uniqueness, but it's really a balance.
That one was powerful because I feel that. And I think that a lot of the times that's when you see the social media and TikTok and Instagram, you find these people that are able to find the same interests and the same kind of quirkiness that they enjoy or whatever that they're interested in. And they're able to like find their, you know, other magnetic soul counterparts to be drawn to. And it's really amazing how important it is to just stay authentic and just be your true self. So.
Oh man. Yeah. When I see people really and truly brave enough to do that, my heart just sings a little because I know the world wants them to be something else, and to be able to stand out and be themselves it really, truly makes my heart sing.
So beautiful.
Yeah. Sometimes we feel like we're rejected because we don't have what other people have. This is a social media game, right?
Talk about social media. Okay, here we go.
This is when comparison comes in and we start thinking, I give an example on my blog about working. I was doing CrossFit and I started CrossFit when I was a little older. I think I started when I was like 47, 48. And, you know, I just couldn't keep up with the younger folks. And I was in my head constantly bad talking myself. You're too old. What are you doing? You're an idiot out here. You're always last, blah, 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 blah. And I sat down with John Kim to talk about this. And he's heard me for a while. He listened to me. And then he just looked at me. He goes, you know what, Deanna? And I don't know if I can, can I swear on this?
Of course.
Bleep it out. He goes, you know what, Deanna? No one gives a shit about you. And I was like, Oh yeah. He goes, yeah. He goes, they're all in their head when they're doing workouts. They're all thinking their own, you know, shit talk about themselves. No one is looking at you. No one cares. And, you know, on the surface, I was like, owie. But in truth, I was like, oh, he's so right. Right.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. No,
we compare ourselves to everybody else thinking everyone is looking at us thinking, oh my gosh, they don't have this. They don't have that. Da, 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 da. And in truth, they're all concerned about their own sense of perceived lack and all that stuff.
Hard-hitting truth. And it also, it reminds me a lot because you discussed a little bit about miswanting.
Mm-hmm. That was a term I learned from Lori DeSantos in a free class that she offers on Coursera, the science of well-being, and this idea of what we think is going to make us happy. And we think the big job, the lots of money, the new car, the new house, we think that's going to make us happy. And it might for a short time period, but we then adapt to this newness and we then settle back to our status quo, our state of happiness, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. When does that happen for you?
Ooh, great question. I would say when I first started my podcast journey, I didn't know what to expect with it. And it was just kind of flowing along. And I don't really know what to expect when it comes to listeners or followers or how the marketing aspect of it, it's all kind of like unique in its own sense. There's a lot to do. And I think that I felt like if I do more or put out more or do more or do this or do it that way, then I will get to where I need to be when I really have no idea where I need to be.
That's true.
So why can't I just enjoy the experience as it comes along and learn along the way instead of making it, this is your end goal. What is the end goal, Evelyn? What is it that you want out of this? It's the questioning about what did you want to get out? And in the end, I figured that, you know, my listeners are really important and I really appreciate them for taking the time out of their day to listen to what I have to say or what my guest has to say. So I would really like everyone to leave with more than they came in to when they first started the podcast. And I want to give them that. So that's what I have finally gotten to on my journey of podcasting, which is great.
That is great. I feel like that too. I mean, that talks to the class I taught later on consistency, like the not being tied to the result, just keep going. I'm just going to touch that in because I just want to honor you what you're doing.
Consistency because, is important.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And it's so hard when you don't know. You know, we almost, and I can talk it like this, we almost self-reject ourselves, right? When we don't see the end result, we pull ourselves out. That's why, you know, dieting fails, exercise fails because we didn't gain or we didn't lose the 10 pounds we thought we were going to lose. So we self-reject, we pull ourselves out of the game instead of what you're doing is just going through and having an experience without a specified end goal to say, well, if I don't get here, I'm a failure. I've been rejected. It's not about that. It's about keep going.
Yeah.
To see what the experience will be.
Consistency has just been one of those key words. Like you watch a game show and it's like, keyword is blah, blah, blah. I feel like in my life, the keyword recently has been consistency. Mm-hmm. I had my neighbor who was like, how's the podcast going? I said, podcast is going great. He's like, remember, people love consistency. And I was like, okay, thank you. Which is so funny. I don't think he listens to my podcast, but it was just so funny because from there, it was like, all I heard was consistency, Evelyn, consistency. So I feel like my journey to being more consistent has been slow, and I apologize for that. I'm not going to make any excuses, but I will say that I really have still enjoyed the process of getting to where I have to be, and I'm learning to be more consistent, which is another muscle we got to flex, right? Another muscle we got to train ourselves.
Oh, my friend. Yeah, that was a late in the game muscle for me too. Mine was baby tiny atrophied when it came, because consistently felt like a dirty word. It felt like it was boring and hard and I was caged in. I couldn't understand what freedom I would get from consistency.
Wow, that is a big pot of gold at the end of the tunnel. You just said freedom at the end of consistency. Not something I would expect to get, but you're right.
Yeah. when we can just be consistent, there's so much, there's mental freedom that comes in with not, oh gosh, I could talk about this one forever.
Okay.
But we're talking about rejection.
Back to rejection, have another podcast on consistency.
Yeah. Another one is just the idea around rejection, kind of these lies or these myths that we believe is that when I keep getting rejected at something that I really want to do, it's just a sign that I should quit. I see this with new coaches who are really trying to get new clients. And in the beginning, it's hard. It's not a muscle. Most coaches come into this because we are heart-centered and we want to serve. And this idea of asking for money feels gross. And we don't know how to make the transition from I'm serving you to now I need to ask you for some money for these services, which feels so hard. And you can get a lot of no's in that. And you can feel like, well, I guess I'm just not cut out for this. And so staying with it, again, that consistency. I love the story around Harlan Sanders, the father of Kentucky Fried Chicken, right? I think he had that recipe for years, and only at the age of 65, when he was living off Social Security, making like $130 a month, did he start going out to restaurants. He went over to 1,009 restaurants to sell his recipe.
That's it? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Just like, can you imagine? That's it. Can you imagine keeping to go? Yeah. I met recently a guy who became a coach, created a package, set his price, and then had over 79 enrollment conversations before someone said yes.
Wow. But he did it.
But he just kept going. That, yeah. I mean, it's the marriage of rejection and consistency that we can allow these stories of rejection to inspire us. But when it's us, it can feel impossible to keep going. We think it's a sign, but really what we're doing is just like what you're doing, Ev. You're honing your skills of becoming a great podcaster. If this is what you want to do, and this consistency, and it may be, you know, at some point you may have felt I should have more listeners by now or whatever you think, or I should have, you know, people who are sponsoring me, I should have advertisers. All of that, the should haves, could become the story of why I shouldn't be doing this anymore. And instead, what I heard you say is I'm just going to keep going and have the experience. You're honing your skills, just like that guy who had over 79 conversations. By the end, what happened for him is he sold his first package. And by the way, these were $6,000 packages. He sold his first package. And then very quickly, in the next 2 weeks, sold his second, third, and fourth package. Because he just found it. He found how to do this. And it was just a matter of time.
That is incredible that he was able to do that and finally figure out the magic key to how it would work for him.
Yeah. But if we believe that lie to say I'm rejected after the 20th one, you know, it's like, well.
I think I actually started my email to you or my message to you was like, hey, in the spirit of rejection, would you please come on my podcast? Feel free to say no, but please come talk about rejection. And you were like so kind. You're like, of course. Yeah. So
of course. You. Well, I mean, I think I have one more, and that's just the idea that we're born into it, that we're just someone who is going to experience rejection our whole entire life. And that may be the idea that you're selecting your data. You're selecting the data to support a story. But I bet you if we could turn the magnifying glass on other areas of life, when you have an experience, when you actually got what you wanted, but those become not supportive of the story. And so we push those under the rug or we disregard them and put a magnifier or a microscope on those times that we are rejected and think, yep, that's just me. That's my whole story. But it never really is.
That one's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it is easier to slip into that. Oh, another thing. Just keep putting it in the backpack, right? Until you're carrying it and it just gets heavier and heavier and it just weighs you down completely.
Exactly. When in reality, I love that image of we got this story backpack on our back. And if we were standing in the field of all of our possibility, we could see that, oh yeah, there was this time I wasn't rejected. There was this time. There was that time too. But our focus is all on the weight of that story in our backpack.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing all of those because they are big, big lies.
Well, I also want to just give a shout out to a book that I read called Rejection Free. And it was written by Scott Allen. And I adapted much of what I just shared from his. I think it's only fair that the originator of that is also taking a nod to. So
thank you for sharing that. I know a lot of my listeners tell me that they like to go and find the resources that my guests share. So thank you for sharing all of those.
Yeah.
Now, what have you learned? I mean, I guess you did talk about a little bit about your rejection rehab and what you've learned. But like going into the future with this, would you do another rejection rehab? Would you tailor it differently?
Yes, okay. I would definitely tailor it differently. I would tailor it in, you know, what I didn't take into full consideration was that I have flexed this muscle for years. So my borders around rejection are probably much wider than a lot of people, you know? And so my, that second day challenge where I asked people to go ask for directions to another country felt wildly uncomfortable for a lot of people. And I honestly was like, really? That, you know, I was a little judgy of it. And then I recognized, oh yeah, Deanna, you've been doing this a long time. Your borders are way out there. So I would start, I started, the first one was just, you got to make eye contact and say hello. Yep. Right. And I would probably start in smaller increments. And I also didn't take into great consideration the pandemic situation. You know, here in Los Angeles, we're opening up and I can walk around my little neighborhood without a mask and feel fine. I don't go into stores or anything like that. But if I'm just out on the street walking my dog, but not everybody is in that situation. I didn't take that into full consideration. And I think I would really just start so people could have the success. And even though it comes to rejection, it was interesting. People were rejecting the rejections. People were rejecting the challenges. And, you know, all of that is, I would love to just sit down with everyone and find out what was the hard part for them. And it's interesting. People love the idea of change, but boy, we don't like to do it.
Yeah. Cause that means that that's actionable. Like, oh, you want me to put action behind that too? Okay. Yeah. I guess I have to make that actual just thought and action.
But we did have someone go all the way through it. I'm so impressed and proud of her. She went through everything and she did a great job of captioning it on Instagram and Reels. And I think for those people who did, they were also who also tried some other things, were also often surprised at how often they got a yes instead of a no.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorites was one that we had to share a picture of, you said a plant, a picture of your child, something, a dog, your dog or something, just share a picture from your phone with a stranger. And I was in line at a store and I went up to the cashier and I was like, now or never, Evelyn, just do it. And I was like, hi, can I show you a picture of my friend's cute baby? And she was like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. Okay, yeah, I love babies. And so I showed her. And then we had this full conversation about children and we went deep. I'm not going to lie. We went to a deep conversation about it, but it's that, you know, inquiry and questioning and just opening up. It was a beautiful experience, but it was hilarious because the next week I went back to that same store and I just so happened to get the same exact woman to help me. And it was like a reunion. Oh, my friend, how are you? Like, so good to see you.
Yeah.
But it was this even deeper connection because what are the chances that I would get the same person again? Cause it was a completely different day and she was in a completely different line. It was just, you know, chance. I mean, yes, it was the same store, but still it was very much surprising.
Yeah. And I just want to reflect back to you, Evelyn, what you did for that person, because you can imagine their job gets very repetitive. People are in their own space when it comes to grocery shopping. They may or may not be engaging with them. And yet you have a human in front of you. And what you did is, again, that disruption of the every day. You brought them a conversation that's in the moment. So of course you're going to be remembered by her because you brought your whole self into that experience and allowed her to be seen. She got to be seen and heard and valued by you. And where so many of our service workers are just treated like service workers instead of the human beings they are. So I love that you did that.
It was great for both of us. And thank you so much. You know, I used to work at Trader Joe's and they have those Trader Joe's and they want to take the time to get to know you. And when I was hired there, it was so funny because I thought, oh, I'm going to get in so much trouble for talking to these customers on the floor. Not once, never once did a manager ever come up to me and be like, Evelyn, get back to work. It's time to go back to work. It was always like, did they like the products that you opened up for them? Did they enjoy it? I said, yeah, I think they really liked it. They're like, oh, that's so great. But genuinely kindness. Yeah. If anybody needs an uplifting beat, just go to Trader Joe's and have a nice conversation.
Isn't Trader Joe's amazing? Oh, it's so great.
Absolutely. Just a side note. I want to talk more about you, my dear, because you offer so much. You have a website and you offer more than just your Moffitt Talks on Instagram. You offer your personal coaching services as well as the power journaling.
Yeah. So the power journaling is an online course. Yes, you can certainly get it there. I offer private coaching and a small mentoring group. So, you know, usually as students go through, if they're interested in working with me for a time period, they can, you know, find two or three or four of their cohorts and I'll work with them on helping them set up their business as we go through that. The private coaching is really around all around personal development. I take a look at 12 different areas of your life and help my clients really create a book for themselves, their own personal development book on how do we touch on all of these areas. I love that work. I still do work in the corporate world. I do workshops and teaching there as well, and all around topics around leadership and DE&I work around diversity and equity and inclusion. I've got lots of pokers and lots of different fires.
I know that we were talking about imposter syndrome yesterday, and I know that everybody kind of goes through this in their everyday life. And can you please tell the story about how you went to your workshop? Is that something you'd be willing to share? Yeah.
So this actually, because I went to, and this came from this gentleman, and his name is Rich Litvin. He wrote a book called The Prosperous Coach, and I went through an intensive of his. And so we had these four, what he called accelerator calls, before the actual workshop happened. And so it's the first one I'm in. I don't know any of these people and they're coaches from around the globe. And he starts calling people out to coach them directly on this call. I'm super excited about this, but he calls out one woman. Clearly he's worked with her before. And he says, you know, do you have something to work on? And she said, yes, I am working on an offer for one of my clients for $1 million proposal. And I immediately felt all of my armpit and the heat on my sides just start rising up and like the sweat on the back of my neck thinking, I am in the wrong room. These are not my people. I would love to maybe someday. I was like, $1 million for what? And I dawned on me or it came clear that she has a coaching firm and she was contracting with a company. It wasn't just her one coaching service, but still that is far beyond where I'm at right now. And that's okay. I'm thrilled for her. But I truly thought that I'm in the wrong room. I had such imposter syndrome and I was like, this, I had to really talk myself into just go to the next call. And it's something that he actually says, Rich Litvin says that if you have imposter syndrome, I hope you never get over it. Because that just means that you're in a bigger room. And you can think about this. I bet you experienced this. You started something new. You started a new job. You started doing something. You started this podcast and you thought, who am I? Oh my gosh, got such, what am I to do
this? Yes.
Right? And then eventually you start figuring it out. You're like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then other people start seeing you as an expert. I bet you there's people in your cohort wondering how you started your podcast. Like how you're just a few steps ahead of them, but they're already looking at you as like someone who's doing it. And that's how we move through imposter syndrome is we just do it. And then we go into the next bigger room and oh, here it comes again. I don't know if I should be here. When in reality, it's the exact right spot for you to be in because you're continuing your growth and learning. It's going to feel wildly uncomfortable for a while.
Yeah.
But you're in the right room.
That one was a big one. Again, you leave me like with just more to think about. But You're right. I joined more podcasting groups on Facebook because I just wanted to see what it was. I thought it would be great to be a part of a podcasting community. And I get in there and I'm like, whoa, like, wait a second. But actually, I've learned so much more by joining, so much more than I could ever had hoped for. And it's all there and it's all, you know, free information and people wanting to help. And so it just took me to another room, like you said. So
yeah,
this has been incredible. But you know, this podcast is called Twisted Plot Podcast. And I gave myself a big plot twist with this podcast when I started it. And I've gotten to where I am now. And I have to keep this same theme. So I was hoping maybe you could give me a plot twist, either a plot twist that you've learned from or something that you can imagine for yourself. We talk about dream, right? Mm-hmm. What is your plot twist?
Dun, dun, dun. My plot twist is that I could marry everything that I've done in my past. So I could marry improv, I could marry storytelling, and I could marry coaching into a Broadway show that people come into to be fully entertained and laugh, but they walk out completely, not completely, but they walk out a little changed. They have a different perspective on their world. Maybe they show up with more curiosity. There's a shift that makes in the show that they didn't expect that they would have when they came in. That would be my plot twist.
I love that so much. It resonates with me so much just with my podcast. I am feeling that so much. That is a great one. I can't wait to see your show on Broadway.
I can't wait either. I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I definitely, I think it's totally doable. I just don't know how to do it. I'm going to figure that out.
And I'll have you back on here when you do it. So we can talk about it and promote it. So, Deanna, where can everyone find you on social media, your website? I want them all to be able to get to know you better.
You can go to my website at deannamoffitt.com. There's a lot of double letters in that. So it's D-E-A-N-N-A, M as in Mary, O-F-F as in Frank, I-T-T, so many double letters in that. And then you can find me on Instagram at Deanna Moffitt and on Facebook at Coach Deanna Moffitt. And you can find me in Los Angeles. I'm usually walking my dog, Tori.
I'm going to come find you, ask you for directions to.
I love it. Yeah, come. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. The two of us together. Let's just go on like an actual retreat and just start doing the rejection rehab live.
I love it. I think it's a great idea.
That'll be our plot twist. That's what we'll do. Well, thank you so much, Deanna. I'm so happy that you came here. You know, everybody can find me at Twisted Plot Pod on Instagram. Just give us some feedback. Tell us what you like about it and go find Deanna. Deanna, do you offer a 30-minute consult?
Yeah, if you want to go to my link in the bio, I think it's there, or you can go to my website and ask and sign up for a consult there for sure. You can get on my calendar.
Which is awesome. I highly recommend it because just even 1 minute with Deanna is just enlightening. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And thanks for coming on, Deanna.
Thanks, Evan.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us. Tune in next time. And remember, stay twisted.